All right, so we are here to talk about discovering data-driven applications that learns and adapts. In a way, we're going to talk about intelligent applications. So quick mention there, what is an intelligent app, right? Intelligent apps learns and adapts to deliver more powerful experiences. In this era of computing, data has emerged as the most powerful asset we have. And certainly, we all want to go and figure out and build analytical insights into the data set. One of the key scenarios where we have been seeing a lot of our developers asking that question is, can I really go and add intelligence to an existing app or to a new application? And the answer is yes. And how are we going to do this? Probably this is a great session to go and talk about those certain features, how we build into the application and you evolve and grow the application into a more intelligent app. The notion, though, when we talk about building intelligence into an app, if you can relate to, is a feedback loop. Okay, so there are open feedback loops, and how we close those feedback loops with certain feature sets is what this session is all about. So it's a very demo-heavy session. We're going to plot a lot of R graphs and whatnot. My name is Tara, and I'm a technical product manager with Microsoft. I've been working with Azure for the last 3.5 years, and for this last 1 year in the Azure Data Services business. And a lot of my work, these timeframes, is all about building intelligent applications as such. Okay, so look at that map right there, right? How many of you go for skiing here? Good, so that's awesome. Hopefully you should be able to use this app once we finish this app building today. So if you look at that, when you're in a ski resort, that's where your app is. So you're kind of carrying the app, you are there with your phone. We want to go track your location and also kind of give you recommendations based on some of the past history and experiences. When we talk about an intelligent app, it's just not a sophisticated application. It's more about learning from the past experiences and giving you some more of an insight into the data set. For an example, in a ski resort, you may want to go and figure out what's going to be tomorrow in terms of the number of people who walk in here. How do I go and have the right amount of staff who kind of takes care of the customers who are walking in? And for a user, it's all about getting the right information. Hey, you know what? There might be some delays in probably getting into a lift as such to go to a specific zone where they can go skiing, right? So let's talk about feedback loops. The first feedback loop we're going to talk about today is about transactions. When you open up an app and you're going to, let's say, reserve your ski rentals in a resort, that's basically a transaction because you're actually using the phone, you're using the app, you're feeding some data there, right? How are we going to close that loop? We're going to talk about that in a demo later. The next feedback loop is implicit events, where you have no control. You're kind of not working with the app, you're not playing with the app, but you have given an access to, let's say, an organization or to the ski rental people there that you can go and track my locations. So it's just sitting, let's say the phone or the app is sitting in your pocket. That's an implicit event, right? You're not playing with the app, but we are still able to go and locate you. And we're going to close that loop as well when we see the demo, right? And the third and very critical loop is the explicit choices. You know, for an example, when you saw that guy right there skiing all the while, and then he wants to go and, let's say, figure out what are his choices in terms of dining outside today. Right? That's an explicit choice. So, you know, it's all based on the past recommendations, the history, whether today he's traveling with his family and he would have gone alone to a ski resort in the past. All of that will all, you know, kind of pitch in when we kind of talk about explicit choices. All right? So let's look at, how to add intelligence to an existing app. So we're going to quickly go through some of the slides that how we're going to build this intelligence, and then it's all about looking at the backend in the demo. So look at this. This application is currently showing you, it's a basic app. It's a great app, no doubts. When you kind of click on that app and you just go and book a rental reservation with your ski details, you know, whether you are an intermediate skier, how long you want to go stay in the ski resort and whatnot. But what it's missing is intelligence, you know. Based on the fact, now let's assume this was used by the organization as I was taking an example. How do I go and predict the demands? So it's about predictive analytics, right? When you see that on the top, it says, hey, you know what? The ski rentals is high on demand. So, you know, there's two things going to happen there. One, the organization is going to go and staff more people. And for the user, he would be like, OK, I probably need to go in early to go and collect my ski rentals. The second one is about, so that was the transactional loop, which we're talking about. The next one is about, let's say, the lift status, right? So you are kind of going to certain lifts within the ski resort. Now, this particular piece of the app, which is, again, a pretty nice looking app, tells you which are the open and the closed lifts. But what it's not telling you about is if there is an anomaly detection, like there's a lift which is kind of stuck at this stage, you know, how long is the wait time going to be? Or give you some sort of a prediction that, you know, how soon you could get access to some of the lifts. So the next piece is how do you add intelligence? You know, then you kind of bring in all those, you know, time frames in terms of the wait time. And also if you see that red ring down there is the anomaly detection. You know, something went wrong with the lift. So it helps you identify anomalies as well. Right? And the next thing here is all about the explicit choices. So the previous slide was about implicit choices you make. And here, if you see, like, a basic app is going to tell you, all right, here is a recommendation where you can go and dine in. All right? But as most of you might have used, you know, applications like Yelp and others to kind of get some insights, what an intelligent app should tell you is, hey, you know what? You can dine in here, but you can also dine in these four different places. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to go and look into this whole building of the application. This application is built on Cordova platform. And there's going to be a lot of moving pieces. We're going to add in, let's say, our services to go and build predictive analytics. So before that, let's have a look into some of the architecture. So you saw some great slides. And now let's go back to the drawing board. Here's my architecture, right? Not that pretty looking, but gives you some sort of an insight. When you see on the left-hand side, we're going to prep the data first. You know, every time we have to go and pull in something which is more intelligent, how do we go and prep the data based on the past experiences? You know, all the data where you might have booked a reservation for a ski resort is stored somewhere in some transactional system, right? So we kind of look at the transactional system, prep that data. And then what we do on top of that is, with the help of our services, which is now available in SQL 2016, we're going to go and prep the model and then encapsulate that on the stored procedures, which kind of can be integrated into the input of the application. But it's very important that we prep the model, we train the model, and then we kind of go and add that to the application. Right? So that's what you're going to be seeing when we talk about the transactional loop. And also, how do we add intelligence to an application? So let's go and look at the demo, right? OK, so that's the app we have got. Andrew Davis is kind of locked on. He's pretty happy with the app. It looks good. And then let's look at, quickly, the rental reservation experience. Now, when he goes here, clicks on Add Reservation. And you know, I'm not going to go through this, but I'm just telling you, 2017, 2nd of Jan, and that looks fine. So you know, it doesn't tell you whether there's going to be high demand or whatnot. So there's Andrew Davis who's kind of booking this resort at this stage. And once we go through all the details, we kind of click on this to book the reservation. You should see a reservation like this here. So just kind of to save some time, we won't go through that process. OK, so that's the basic app. The app does quite a bit more stuff as well. Let me just give you an overview. There is rental reservations, there's lift status, if you recall. That's exactly what you saw in that slide. And then also there is dining. Plus, on top of that, we do have quite a few information about the weather, the temperature, you know, the base depth of the snow as such. So this app kind of gives you a lot of insight, and you can take some intelligent actions based on it. Okay. So what we're going to do is, this is the app which is already running, and that's the base app. Now we're going to go and add intelligence into this app. First thing, what we saw there in that architecture was we need to go prep the data. So how do we prep the data? Okay, so let me give you a quick glimpse of, you know, the database system we have here. So Control-4. So that's our database system. AdventureWorks.SkiResort is my database. I have got some of the rental tables there. So let me just go and show you that. Right, so we have quite a few details being stored, holiday, lift, model, rental, and rental table is our table where all the transactional data has been stored and past history has been stored. So let's go and look at the data set first thing first, you know, how it looks like. So Let me just, because it's a pretty big data set, let me just figure out the top 10 from the list. All right, and that's kind of small, so let me increase the size. Right, so what it's doing is, if you have a closer look, there is rental IDs, there is end date, there's pickup hour, pole size, shoe size, key size, start date, total cost. So it's quite a bit of an information which is stored right there into that transactional table. Okay, now part of the prep, one of the key things which we did was, while building this app, was to go and create a view based on the data set we have. Okay, think about this, that the rental table, because we have to go and build some analytics, think about the rental table as a fact table. Okay, and then once we go and look into the fact table, and the way we have built the view is like this. So we have added holiday as one of the dimensions, if you have to consider this to be a more of an analytics table, and then weather history and all of that. And why have we done this? Because what we're doing is we're actually calling this view, and every time we call this view, it actually goes and looks at all the data from the previous years and from the past experiences. So let's go and look at this view, which we have prepped here. Okay, so let me go to SQL query. This mode is a little bit tricky. So let's go and, okay, it's already there. So all right. Now, if you see that, I'm doing a select star from rental features, that's the view is actually looking at specifically holidays, snow, weekday rental count. This is important, because if I don't prep the data based on what my needs are, because the columns which you saw in rental table was pretty humongous. But what I really need is something like snow, whether it's going to be snowing today or not. It's like a Boolean, right? So true or false. And then you have holidays, whether it's going to be a public holiday or it's a Sunday or a Saturday. We expect more people to kind of walk in on those days to a ski resort per se. Whether it's a weekday or not, that can also help me decide what sort of a model I'm going to build. So it's very important that we prep this data and then we kind of start building the model. Okay, so that's my view. And if you see that we have information from 2013 to 2015, 2016, which is completely stored in the transactional system. Okay, so what we're going to do here is we're going to go and create a model using our services. And why are we doing this? So that I can get some very actionable insights, detailed analytics built on this data set. Okay, and how we're going to achieve it is that what you're going to see in this demo. So let's go and look at the rental demand experiment here. So this is what we have built. Let me just kind of take you through what we're doing and how the data set is prepared as such. So first thing we're doing is we're kind of pulling in a library, which is called rpar.plot, and then trying to extract it, right? And while extracting, we also make a connection to SQL Server. This is the first step where we would go and invoke our services, which is built into SQL Server now. There are different tool sets which you could use. I don't know what you guys use if you're coding in R language, but then RTVS, which I'm using here, R tools for Visual Studio. It's a great tool set to kind of go and execute such queries, okay? So let me just kind of give you some details there right now. So let's go and execute this. And what you would see is that the connection has now been made, and I've already called in the function rpar.plot. Okay. Let's go and run the head rentals, which will give me details about, what's the data set like. So first, let's import the data to the server data. So we're going to extract all the data from that query, which you saw. And if you remember, this is the same view we're talking about, right? So rental features is what we just prepped in terms of data set. Now we're going to go and run this rentals, import it to server data, and for that I'm just going to go and run this so I can use control enter. Right, so now that looks good. So if you see, we have read 454 rows and around 0.085 seconds. I'll talk about how are we even going and getting this data in real time and super fast. There is this concept of a column store index. How many of you know column store index? Okay. Just for your information, so when you store your data in a relational database system, you store the data in a row format. And each row is of 8K. Now, when you have to get some real data insights into a billion of billions of records, you may want to go and segregate your data based on column. So when you, and the best part is I can choose my columns on a specific index I'm building, if it's a non-clustered index or whatever. The whole idea of operational analytics, which was built into SQL Server 2016, is you can have both non-clustered columns or index and in-memory together running to kind of give you real real-time experiences in extracting the data layer. So when I look into this, I'll talk about and show you that non-clustered index and how it's been built. But when we query the column. So think about there is this specific SSN name, first name, last name. So rather than if your query is to go find certain SSNs, then you won't query the row. You would just query the column, and that's how column store keeps the data. It's great for batch processing, awesome for analytics. So we'll see that in a moment. Sam, just want to mention that. So all of this data, what you're seeing, the quick churn of that is because of that built-in column store index we have. Okay, so next thing we want to do here is let's go and look at the head rentals, right? So we have now imported the data. That's now pretty much part of the whole preparation of the model. So let's go and hit Control Enter. And you would see that now I have the data set here. Now, if you see on the right-hand side, I've got snow in true and false, which I was talking about, that this is a Boolean expression. And then you have holidays, which is again Boolean. So, true, false there as well. And the weekdays are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? So based on that data set, I need to go and predict this or build this model. So we're going to spend some time here building this model right now. Okay, so the next thing we're going to do is I'm just going to run this by itself. If I go and plot the rental dollar snow, rental dollar rental count, so we have a few variables which we have defined. If I run it like this, because it's not a categorical value, you would see there is a plotting issue, okay? Let me just kind of take out myself from the zooming and run this for a second and then zoom in again. So if I do this, right, what it should do is it should plot the graph. Now, if we look at this on the right-hand side, let me zoom in again and show you that this is not the sort of graph I'm looking for. I'm plotting and I'm trying to get some recommendations, but because this is not a categorical value we have defined, we haven't factored it. So eventually it shows me something which is not so well readable. So it's giving me some idea that maybe on certain time frame between the X and Y axis, there's some people who came in and this was pretty high on the right hand side. So, but I need to get some more details. This is not the right plotting of the graph. So what do we do here? We kind of go and factor it then, right? The first thing we want to do now is, okay, let's go factor it and make it more a categorical value. So I will go and execute this right now. And when I do this, what you would see is once I factored, especially based on snow and rental count, because they both are Boolean expressions, you would see on the right-hand side now have a better graph, right? So this is all from our tools of Visual Studio. Now look at this, right? My prediction is saying that probably on a specific day where maybe snowing and the rental count is such and such, I would probably get, my recommendation model says that it's going to be looking pretty good. I mean, but still I have a good amount of, false, which is kind of drives me to figure out that if my model is correct. So we're going to go and keep executing on the model. Just to kind of mention that this is not the way we create models. There's a lot of discussion we can have when you go to data scientists today. They are, talking about calculus. They're talking about a lot of different models they use for prediction. But this is like a very basic model because we have a very basic data set, and that's how we could do the demo. So let me just go and show you the rest of the things. Okay, so what we're going to do here is rather than plotting per rental snow, rental count, what we're going to do is we're going to plot this R services graph based on the weekday. So based on a specific weekday and rental count, how is going to be my prediction? So we're just kind of going towards making a better prediction and a better model. So let me go and hit Control Enter, and let's see what happens here. Pretty neat, right? So I got a better idea based on the weekday. So I know that on weekends, people will go snowing. So I still have a pretty good chance of suggesting or kind of having more people to kind of cater to my customers in the ski resort, right? So if you see on the left-hand side, that's kind of Sunday, and on the right-hand side, you have Saturday. In between on weekdays, we don't have much people. So, you know, how do we go cater to the needs is what this is all about. The next one we want to highlight is, how do I go and factor, you know, based on the fact that it could be a public holiday, right? It may be a holiday as such, or, you know, people are going on a holiday season where this is like the peak. So let's go and build a factor on these guys. And I'm just gonna, I could run this all by itself, but I'm gonna run this as a model together. So I'm just gonna go control enter. And if you see, so when it's looking at the rental on a weekday and the snow and holiday, then it has a even better graph on the right-hand side. But this is like the part of the whole model preparation, okay? Now, this is done. Let's go back and keep creating and evaluating the model to make sure that we can execute it and add it back to the sort of procedure within SQL Server. Okay. Fair. Now, what we're going to do here is pretty interesting. I want to go and train the data and then test the data, which is very important. You have to keep testing your models in R to ensure that the model is correct, at least close to correct. And as I was saying, right, you know, the boosted decision tree or, you know, the predictive models, which is grained, that those are the topics, you know, for data scientists to have in terms of the discussion. So, you know, this is pretty broad. Please consider this to be a more of a basic conversation on model quality. Okay, so when I go and execute this guy here, now I'm plotting based on, you know, the date, rental year, rental month, rental day, and rental count. Now see what happens on the right-hand side. So what I've predicted here is I have 2013, 2014's data. Based on that data set, I'm predicting how it's gonna be in 2015 and 2016, right? That's where we're heading with this model preparation. And if you look at this query closely, what we're gonna do is we're gonna train the data based on that model, which is less than 2015. So what happened in 2013 to 2014 will give me a great amount of information to train my model. So let's go and hit control enter. And let's see what happens here. It's pretty much the same, which is cool. And then let's go and also execute these guys. And that will be pretty much the test data, which we're gonna see. And okay, that's done. And let's see if we have any output here. All good. Pretty much all the model has been built. So we've got the test data. We have also got the trained data. Now it's all about putting it into a model and encapsulating it. So if you remember the architecture, preparation, the data preparation, the preparation of the model, execution of the model, and then importing it into the application. So let's go and look at this. Okay. So here is what the catch is. Now we've got rental count, which is basically the function, and then you have all these variables of month, day, which can change, you know it. And also, we want to go and create a, you know, regression model. So what happens here is, you all are aware of binary tree, right? A binary tree or an indexer, right? So generally, what happens in concepts like these when you're creating, you know, some sort of graph theory in terms of getting some more insights into the data, this could actually help you build close to perfection of a model, right? So let's go and enter this. When I'm doing this, what you would see is, sorry, my bad. Just go in. One quick second. I think did I miss anything? No, I didn't. So that's perfectly fine. We should see the data set here in a second, or I'm not hitting in control enter. Control enter. Okay. Let me just go and run the prep model just for a second. Just want to be sure that, you know, we are definitely running this. Yeah. So when you now see this, and after doing all the training of the data and testing the data, now I have kind of a model which might work well for me. But still, it's not like the best model you could see. You know, we have weekdays, certainly 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We know those are the weekdays where we'll probably have a lot of no's. Also, the month, initial month, greater than 2.5 is where we will see most of the people coming into the ski resort. But if you could see that if the snow is false, we have a lot of dropouts. And if the if this is holiday, which is false, then we don't have a lot of people coming in as well. You know, so this is the model we want to go play with, and we want pretty much want to have for this particular app right now. So let me go and do another thing, and then we'll just go and tie this model back, because we don't have to just build a model, but we also have to tie it back to the application. Now, once this is done, you need to go and create the predict model based on the test data. If you recall, that's how we use the test data, which is just right there in the top. And when I go enter this, this is done. And then I'm going to go and execute this guy. So when we do this, okay, now look at this. If you remember when we ran this initially, we never had a very clear view. But if you look at this very closely, based on the test counts and my data set which I prepared, I have kind of got a very good prediction. The one in the middle is pretty much I hit the nail on the head. But again, as I said, this is like a very basic model, so I still got some of the things which are not apt enough. And we got some of them just above zero or just below zero, so we weren't able to get true and false. And that's why you need to keep training the model to have a perfect model inbuilt for analytics. Okay, so what we're going to do is, now this is all kind of done. So we're going to go and so that's kind of all true. And we're going to go and now package this app. Okay, so let's do this. Once this is all done, how we kind of put this back into SQL Server. Now, if you recall that I mentioned initially that we will encapsulate this into a stored procedure. So let me show you how that looks like, right? So first thing we're going to do is, when we're talking about training the model, here is what we have built, right? So if you see, this is a basic stored procedure where we're going and writing about, you know, training the rental model. And I've picked up the data set, which is based on the model we created. We felt that is kind of close to the model we want to have for this application. But it's very important to note that the model is looking at rental count, which is the function, and all the variables based on the month, day, time, and whatnot. Okay. Now, once this is done, we pack up the model and put that into the blob. Basically, the blob is going to be looking like more of a binary object, because that's how blobs are stored. And then what we do here is we put the input into the model. So there is a table called model, which is available in SQL Server. And then we extract the output and put the output here, you know, in a serialized format. Okay, so this is where, you know, I've already trained the model. Now I have to go and create a prediction model so that I can encapsulate now completely into the sort of procedure. Now this is where you would see that, if you recall, we need to go and unserialize because we are predicting. So the trained model has been reviewed, you know, kind of pulled, and then we unserialize just the around, down there at the model layer. And all the data is now in raw format. And then we run the predict on the model and rentals. And once that happens, you would see that the application now, which is pretty much built, so we have already done the model, we just need to go and create the execution. So let me go and do one thing before we get there, and that is to kind of show you the details on the column store, and then we can just execute this and encapsulate and run the application again. So let me take you through the query again. So if you recall, we were talking about the rental features. I'll just go execute this guy. And what I've done is I've put the execution plan in place. That's where it is. And when I look into the execution plan, if you see closely, so that's Control-4. If you see, it's a column store index scan, and if you closely have a look at that, the actual execution mode is batch, and that's how, you know, you can look at, you know, past experiences, histories, which is stored in you know, SQL Server in a very quick fashion and get the data out, right? Fair. So let's go and execute the app, because now the model has been built. It's already part of the proc, so we're going to go and execute the proc once, you know, this particular model has been called from the application. So we have the Ski Resort web app as the starter project, And I'm going to go and execute this guy right now. So what it should do is it should open up a web mobile app, because as I said, it's a Cordova app, and we chose a web mobile just to kind of show the app in a better possible way. And the fluidity is pretty neat. So once this app comes up, what you would see is how that trained model starts giving me recommendations. So let's keep an eye on this guy. So if you remember this experience with this guy, when we went to rental and we were looking for a specific date, now because my model has been trained, let's see what happens here. So Andrew Davis needs to log in. So we'll log into this app. And let's now look into the rental reservation. OK, so same date. If you remember, we used, 02/2017 and 01. That's kind of around January sometime. I'm going to do the same thing, 01/02. Because the model was built, and I'm running this app locally, right? So we built the model, we encapsulated, we ran it, and look at that. Now it's telling me, as I was saying initially, the organization now knows that, hey, you know, there's a high rental demand, let's have more people. And as a user, when I'm using this app, I know, hey, I need to be a little early to go and collect my ski rentals, even though I have booked it, because it's in high demand, right? So that's how you kind of get into the R code and, you know, build intelligence into the application. Any questions there before I move on to the next piece? No questions? But again, just to mention, the model needs to be more trained as you go, and you need to keep working on the model to make it more linear in terms of its regression. OK, so the next thing we're going to talk about here is shift to the slide deck and talk about the next piece in this demo. OK, so here is the implicit feedback loop we're going to kind of discuss. If you look at that, you know, those guys are actually asked to go and download the app. So they have all downloaded the app, and they have accepted that my location details could be shared. OK. So when they do that, they're not using the app. It's in their pocket, but we are kind of constantly looking at their movements, right? Any movement is an event. And how we're kind of storing the data is through event hubs in Azure. Okay, so all of those events are getting generated through event hubs. And then we run a stream analytics job to capture those events. Some of them are not required, so we kind of archive it. And some of them we kind of create aggregates. But what we want to achieve here is with that data set is to do some anomaly detection. You know, a lift status which has, or a specific lift which has never been so slow, there's a high wait time. You know, it could be that there are more people, there's a long wait time, or it could be that there's something wrong with that lift. So how do we build that into the app is what we're going to see in the next part of the demo, right? But this is kind of the way most of the application or resorts or organizations are working today. There's a lot of data which is coming from sensors and device locations. And this is like a key scenario where we pretty much get in, and we need to build in some recommendation APIs or machine learning models and whatnot. OK, so I'm going to go and just switch back to this app and probably just stop the debugging for a moment. I want to show you when we deployed this app how this backend looks like. So let's spend a bit of a time there. So this is all ARM-based. Oh, sorry, my bad. So this is all ARM-based template. So we already have this code available on GitHub. So if you guys want to go try, please go ahead and do it and contribute to this application further. But have a look at this, right? So all the features here we have is we have the event hub, we have the stream analytics, we have storage account, right? There's a lot of insights, you know, we have. The storage is kind of used to keep all those blob data. All the events data which is coming and been captured from the application usage or from the ski rentals or from the sensors are all being stored in the blob storage in a storage account. So let's look at the whole idea of this lift status thing. So let me just go back and pull up the code and show you what we have built, and then we can just go from there. So one of the key things which was important for us to certainly look at any of the details here is to definitely have the position, which has been highlighted. So, using SQL Server, you could store that data, but also using table storage and DocumentDB, you could use latitude, longitude, because they all support geospatial JSON, right? Look at this. So this is kind of was important that I know what the latitude and longitude is so that you know, we can capture the position. So this is a basic thing we've developed. And then we have the list, lists controller, which looks at quite a few details. So if you look at here, so we are looking into the return lift status. You know, let me just zoom in a bit. The lift counts, then you have, is the skier waiting or has a value? If it's returning minus one, then what happens? A more realistic setup is ideal, but then this is kind of gonna give you some of the returning values on the wait time. And as I was saying that, you know, how do we go do anomaly detection is the next piece. Okay, so that's the controller we have written, and then there's certainly the different APIs we're using. Let's go and look into the backend for a moment. So let me just go back. As I was saying, all this data is kind of stored in the blob storage. So let's look at the blob storage for a second. And I can zoom in. Okay. So this is the hub who's reading the data coming from you know, the devices and the location services, and then all of that is being stored here in the blobs. So let's go click on blobs and see what do we have there. You would see that there is this archive thing which I was talking about. So some of the data we have already archived and stored it in a container. And then there are other details about, you know, the references, and then the lift line archives and whatnot. So these are all some of the data sets which is already available to me. So it says historical data, right? The other thing is that what we're doing is the minute information or real-time information is all stored in table storage. There is a reason to it. Why we chose table storage there to keep all the details of the lift status and everything, because it's key value pair, needs very small little space there because our data is not humongous. And then we should be able to quickly access that data. You know, and the best part is you can also use Redis cache or DocumentDB. That's completely your choice. You know, but we chose table storage just for the latency thing. So when let me show you what the table structure looks like. So we are using this tool called the Storage Explorer, and I can just show you when I log into that particular storage account and the table storage. So I do have the lift lines and lift lines archive. And if you see that the partition key, as I was saying, is a key value pair. Let me just make it bigger. So we have Bear Creek, you know, the skier count that's important to me, the time when, you know, they were there. So this is the data we're collecting. And based on that, we're gonna go and prepare a model. The model we are using here is a machine learning model. So we have built up a recommendation and machine learning model, and also we are using an anomaly detection. There is no API, I think, available at this stage for anomaly detection, but there is a recommendation API. So we use the data market one, but then I think now we have a recommendation API available through cognitive services. So, you know, it's a choice you can change or use different APIs. So that's how the data is being stored. Now, that's one important piece. So if you remember, data coming out of the event hubs, getting stored in the table storage. Now, who is helping me with storing this data? And that was basically the stream analytics, right? So it was consuming data from the event hub. And if I go to this stream analytics right now here, oops, close some of this, just a second. Okay. That's tricky. So when I'm here, and I can now look at the stream analytics data, and then you would understand that how the data actually was modeled and then kept into the table storage. So look at this. This is a stream analytics thing. When I click on this guy, I have several inputs and I have a few outputs. Let's have a look. Okay. The inputs, if you recall, when I was showing you the code, there are lifts, there are location of the events, so, you know, people are moving, the data has been captured. And if I kind of keep a closer look into the query, you would figure out that, you know, it's like a SQL-like query which is running on the backend to kind of pull that data set. It's pretty simple. You know, when I look into this, what I'm doing is I'm like selecting into the archive, which you recall is a specific table, from location events. And this is the query you would run against a table storage as such. Okay, so you're selecting into archive from location events, and that's how the data is now ready for model preparation. Okay, the other piece is when we talk about anomaly detection, this is where we put the logic. We say, okay, based on the location events, their latitudes and longitudes, let's have a tumbling window. If there is a longer wait time, let's go figure out what's going wrong with that lift status, right? The tumbling window will help you go and poke those particular lifts in a way that it should give you some status back in return. If it's the wait time in terms of the users, we will get a return based on that. But if it's anomaly detection, then the lift is already stuck, we'll get that information. But that part of the query is looking at the lift counts and also the status of the lifts. Okay, now, so we looked at the data set, we didn't touch it, it was all in my pockets, I was not using the app. We have the data stored in table storage, because it's key value pair, and we have some of the machine learning algorithm which is built on top of it. Let me now show you the data set which we are gonna be hosting. So what we've done is, we have the actual model here, the recommendation model, and we're currently running this through the help of some of the C# code, certainly. And when I execute this model, what it'll do is it'll invoke the events to come through Stream Analytics. Let's go and do that. Let me just make it a little bit bigger so that you can see this. Let's look at the app config. And if you look at the app config, you will pretty much figure out the details. So if you see, this is all event hubs, right? Okay, so let's go and execute. And what it's going to do is it's going to go and start collecting those events. Now, you would see that now, based on the model and the details we have, the events are being collected. And it's been consumed by Stream Analytics. If you recall, there were two inputs. One of the inputs is the event hubs. Okay, and if you see closely, this is the data set. For your information, this is all demo data. So this is not like real customer data or any data we have generated. It's all demo data created. But that's exactly what's happening. Now, let's go and evaluate both the apps right now. So if you recall, when I was in this particular app, which is my basic app, doesn't have intelligence built in, and if I log in and look at the lift status, here is what it was, right? Now let's go and execute our app, okay? Because we have already built the model, it's already in place, the Stream Analytics is running, it's consuming the events, and the event hub is now executing. The recommendation model is being prepared. Now let me just go here and execute this guy. So I'm gonna run the application again, it's locally available on the box. And once I do that, let's see what the difference is. Now this is all in real time, but the data is coming. So the event hubs is reading through the data set. Okay, so it's still building and it's been built, which is awesome. So let's go and look at lift status now. There you go. Right, so it now tells me not only which lift is the closest, may have the shortest wait time, but look at that very closely. It's telling me the wait time, but there is some problem with Educational Hill. Based on the previous data set which we have in the archives and in the blob storage and table storage, we have never had any issues with Educational Hill lift to be that late. And that's where we can go and do anomaly detections. So with the recommendation model we have prepared based on the data set, we're actually predicting we're doing two things. One is prediction, what the wait time is, and second, if there is any anomaly, we can go and highlight. Okay. As I said, this is all machine learning we have built, so I can just show you the code which we have built here. So So let me just go here and show you that. So that's the recommendation model. So if you kind of click on that, you will find out a lot of details of the Azure Machine Learning recommendations. And then it has all the details of the user keys and how we kind of go and execute the model against some of the lift status, and we will see the dining experiences and whatnot. The best part is that machine learning can be executed or used against any data source, so it helps you in creating those recommendation model pretty well. Right, so any questions there? Is it clear so far what we're trying to do? Okay, so that's how we build intelligence for something where you don't have any user interaction with the app. You know, it's all pretty much sitting in your pocket. Okay, the next thing we want to talk about is the architecture for restaurants. Okay, it's kind of important that we also look at the explicit feedback loop. So let's have a look at that. So just a quick recap before we get there. So just to mention the extended events, then the stream analytics or the event hubs, the stream analytics, the aggregations and anomaly detection with the lift status, plus the predictions on the wait time. This is the final loop, all right? This loop is all about the explicit choices you make, all right? So if you see here, people have already done reservations. We're keeping some history of their previous dining experiences in a history.txt file or CSV file and whatnot, all right? Then that data is further trained with the help of machine learning. And what we're doing is we are introducing something called as Azure Search on top of the computed recommendations. So here what we're going to do is we're going to look into the reservation categories, then look into the model, and then look into some of the aspects of how we compute that recommendation using Azure Search. Okay, so again, a quick experience on the app. How does the app look like today? All right, so let's go and see the app. Okay, so let's go back and see the dining experience. So when I click on dining, first thing, few things which just kind of catches my eye is, first, it's not sorted. And second, it doesn't have faces, great suggestors. I don't know how far it is, whether it's family friendly, it is kind of, but then for me, it doesn't look like it's very helpful to me. Okay, that's fine. Even if I have to go search for that information, fair enough. I'll just go pick up, let's say, SQL Server Grill, even though it's 21 miles away. It's looking at the data set and recommending go ahead and eat. There could be some menu options, and this is like basic data set, right? And then you have description of, you know, what's really good here in this restaurant. But what it's not telling me are two things. One is, hey, can I have better recommendations based on where my position is? So the longitude, latitude I've already defined. And second, I want to have probably, you know, other recommendations where I could go with my family or by myself to go and, you know, dine. So how do we go and get that all encapsulated or injected into the application? So here is what we have done. Let's spend some time here on the app code again. So two things. One is when you look at this data, so we are creating, you know, the restaurant search data. Let's look at the program. So if you look at this closely, this is how we kind of execute search. So what we're doing is looking at the model and the data set we have built, we're creating Azure Search on top of it. How many of you know Azure Search? Or ever worked with Azure Search? Sorry? Oh, sure, sorry. My question is, how many of you have worked with Azure Search? It's a service, okay. So Azure Search is like an Elasticsearch or a search built on managed services in Azure. It has its own indexer, it has its own catalog. What it does is it can actually import data from different sources, table storage, you know, DocumentDB, SQLDB, whatever, and it caches it into its own cache store. And then the indexer is built on top of that, and it executes on a schedule. So eventually the data is refreshed every time and pretty quickly. All right, so what we need to provide there is, because we're creating a recommendation model, and when we go and search for a restaurant, it should give me greater search results and also recommend some great restaurants. So we have two things to go through. One is the Azure search name. So how do you find this information? So we're going to go to the portal again, and I'll just show you based on the data we have. So this is where Azure search is. And let me just zoom in a moment. So I'm just going to show you what the indexer looks like. And then we'll go and look at the recommendation model and then build it to the application. All right, so it's loading the data. As you could see, if you click on import data, you can actually import data from some sources. You know, when I click on that, let me just show you that what we have done, and we will discuss that in a moment's time. So you can connect to your data source. Right, and there's also index customized target index. You can just go and make your index the way you want that to behave. Best part about search is that it supports more than 56 natural language processing different language support. This is cool. Some of the feature sets now are in preview, which is awesome. So they're not production ready, but you could use them. And that's how we used the data from table storage pulled into the Azure search. And then you have different options, as I said, right? SQL Server and Azure VMs, DocumentDB, Blob Storage, Table Storage. Okay, once you import the data and you build the indexer, this is how the indexer looks like. So when you click on the indexer, and the indexer is built on the restaurants, eventually that's what's going to pop up when we go and make a search on the restaurant tab. Okay, now there are quite a few things you can add in it. And you can also kind of add scoring profiles. Scoring profiles will help you with boosting the location details. As in, if you are in some location in the ski resort, the scoring profile will help you find the nearest restaurant. You know, for that, you need to build the scoring profile, and we have some good coding examples for those. Let me just show you some of the other aspects here. So when I click on the add edit fields, I just want to show you how we have built the indexer, right? So look at this. So there are quite a few things here. There's basic data, there is analyzer, and then there is suggester, right? So when we have basic data, we have made it retrievable, filterable, sortable. You can add facets. Facets is just like filtering. You know, if you go to, let's say, a good example is a retail website, and you on the left-hand side, you kind of choose, okay, I need, let's say, to buy a bike. This is my range. You kind of select the range. It should be black. It should be a mountain bike. So as soon as you start clicking those check boxes, it's basically facets, and that comes from Azure Search. And then we have the analyzer. You know, there are different analyzers we build. There are custom analyzers as well, like Phonetics, or you know, the ones which are already built into the system. You can expose Azure Search to REST APIs, and you also have the Azure Search references, which is available through Microsoft's SDK. So looking at the analyzer, what we have done is we have picked restaurant ID, address, and description, and name of the restaurant. You know, that's searchable, but you can actually make any of the other fields searchable based on your interest. So this is completely customizable. And suggestors is basically like IntelliSense. You know, you start typing in, let's say, SQL, or you know, grill or whatever, it starts giving you all the details about, you know, what the restaurant name could be, you know, and based on the recommendations we have and the scoring profiles. It's pretty powerful. And any app is kind of not complete without good search. Like you guys are all using probably the Microsoft Ignite app. I don't know if they have used search, but you kind of maybe looking at some of the SQL sessions or .NET sessions and you're searching for it. You know, think about that in the back end. There is this humongous amount of data which has been stored. And Azure Search is one of those cache stores which can help you with building such applications. Okay, so once this is done, you know, you can just kind of either edit these to kind of add suggestors further, or you can just go with whatever we have. I just want to kind of give you a quick idea about how it looks like. Okay, the next thing is when I look at the scale, I have some of the partitions here, right? And I can click on those to give you some more insight into what the partition scale looks like. All right. With search, you can get up to 99.9% availability. You can have replicas, so you can just kind of move this bar based on the search tier you're using. So if I'm using free, I may not be able to get so many replicas or partitions. But then you can have a standard tier and tier above that to kind of use your search. I think it's free, basic, and standard, which you have available in search. Okay, so that's the search part. Let me just go back to the code here again and show you what this controller looks like, right? So the restaurant controller, when I look into it, so there are a few things, right, which we need to go highlight right now. So based on the get nearby async, so we know this is important because we are looking at the latitude, longitude, so it does support geospatial. And then the next thing we want to do is look at, you know, what the search config is looking like. So, you know, this that'll invoke the search configuration for Azure Search. Anyway, so once this is all been taken care of, the next thing we want to do is look at the recommendation model. So we go back to data generation, and we come to Solution Explorer. And here, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the recommendation. So all of these are the recommendation models. Maybe I should just show you the recommendation.c# file. And look at this. So you would see a lot of entry from, you know, history.txt and rest of the other places. And then it also tells you whether, you know, the model build was successful or not. But this is all machine learning. This is certainly not R, as we saw last time. And we're not going to probably go and create the model. It's already been kind of created just to ensure that, you know, it all works fine. It takes some time because this all needs to be regression tested. So, all right. Once this is kind of done, you have a look at you know, the rest of the summary, which is all about what you need to include, what the metadata looks like, and whatnot. So it's basically that. And then there are some string joins which you kind of do on model ID, and if there is any extract errors which you need to kind of call out. But this is like more internals into the whole recommendation engine. All right, so this is completely built in. And let me just show you the last piece of the code here, which is on the restaurant search. And then we're good to go and execute this as well. Have a look at this closely. So when you look at the program.cs for Azure Search, how are we tying this all model together into Azure Search? So let me just do this. So there is this get build status, where the Azure ML recommendations.build status is canceled, error, or the success. The build has completed, and the model is ready. So as I said, this is all integrated into the Azure Search program on the C# file. Okay, let me just see if I could show you the data set, which is kind of stored here. So some of the data is right here. So you could see that we have history.txt, restaurant.txt. We have used text files, and it's a choice. You could have it in CSV or JSON format, whatever. And this data is stored in table storage again. Okay. Now, once we have integrated search recommendation models, we have prepped the data, the idea is now to go and execute. Now, this has already been prepped just to save some time because it takes a longer time to go and finish the whole part of the demo. So let me go back here. And let's look into the app again. So, okay, let me stop this because we just have ensured this is all fine. Restaurant controller looks great. From a web app perspective, do we have anything else? The app setting should already have that information, and the Azure Search sample data is here in index.json, so that's gonna give you all the details, right? I mean, the analyzers, if you recall, we were talking about what if you have to say something like, hey, best Ethiopian restaurant or best American restaurant around the corner. If you say those words, there could be phonetic search, which could be used as an analyzer. There's also some of the text analyzers we use now with search. There's Lewis, and there's a lot more, which is completely integrated into search. Now, here is some of the details of the JSON file, that how it's been built, and just for your information. whether it's family friendly or not, searchable or not, filterable or not, all of that is integrated into the index.json. Okay, so now let's go and execute the app. And let's see what happens when we have all of this in place. So if you recall the dining experience here, certainly not sorted. And then let's see. It does give me all of this detail, which is good, but then certainly not in the best way possible. And also doesn't give me any recommendations. So there are two aspects to it. Now let me go back and look at this guy. This is up. And now once we go to dining, voila, it's interesting because it tells me two things. One is it's also very friendly because it takes my name and says, hey, Andrew, just go to this location or this restaurant, which is way closer to your location. It's family friendly, yes, because probably Andrew is traveling with family, depending on the data set. It's 0.07 miles, very close to where we are. And let's see, so if we go and write, it does look out for, so you know, this is the suggester thing from Azure Search, and that's how we were building this part of the app. But the best part is, okay, let's now look into or take a deeper dive into this restaurant itself. Now, if you recall, based on the history.txt file, restaurant.txt file, and all the models we built around it, recommendation model, now I have a few more recommendations right there on the screen. So it just not tells me which restaurant is good, but also tells me, hey, based on your choices, based on your past experiences and history, you could also use Mobile App Grill, Azure Brewpub, or Batch Restaurant. These are like some of the restaurants' names we used. That kind of finishes the explicit feedback loop. So we closed three loops. Transactional loop when we added R. We closed the implicit loop when we added machine learning for the lift status and did anomaly detection. We closed the explicit loop by adding machine learning search to kind of create a greater experience with the application. Okay. The next thing we quickly just want to touch upon is, you know, what were today's ingredients and what we really want to achieve in this session, or we wanted to achieve in this session. So two things. Today we used those as the ingredients, right? So if you saw for storing data, we had SQL Server with R, we had Azure Blob Storage. For collecting events, we use Event Hubs, the lift status thing. For learning and adapting with the app, we used machine learning and stream analytics. For improving the experience, we had Azure Search and R tools for Visual Studio. But that doesn't end here. You could have used different services to build the same app, right? So you could have used Data Lake, you could have used Redis Cache, or SD Insight, or an Azure App Service. It's just your choice which you make, right? With different data services to build modern and intelligent applications. Given the fact that it's kind of towards the end of the day, the session, we just want to quickly wrap up here. So some of the things we saw, forecasting was all about demand, revenue, and growth. This is very, very important for an organization to have. For a user, again, important because that will save users time frame and it'll give greater experiences for the user when they use an organizational app. Anomaly detection was through lift status. So you could do fraud analysis, supply chain delays, customer dissatisfaction. And the last and last piece we saw was with dining where you had tailored experiences. So you know, it's more about product recommendations, cross-channel experiences. So this is something where you could go and let's say you have an app today in your organization or you want to build an app, you could easily think about ski rental as a basis, but you can do all of these forecasting and anomaly detection and tailored experiences built into the app. What's next? This is available, the whole code base and everything, the ARM templates, so you just need to go download Git clone and execute. If you have an Azure subscription, it'll just go deploy the whole ARM template, and then you can just start building on top of it. Yeah, the only thing I can mention is that SQL Server Developer Edition is free, so if you want to go try out our services and everything, this is the best time to do so. A request, if you're really passionate about adding intelligence into applications, I think please contribute. You know, this project is pretty open. This will be even better if you have more people going and contributing to the app. But those are some of the key areas you want to kind of touch upon today. And yeah, this is kind of open for questions if you have any.
One question on the scalability of this. When we have, right now we have only one user coming in. What about when we have thousands or millions of users coming? Does the same design decisions we made not work, or do we have to change?
I mean, if it's about modeling, definitely, as I said, it was a saying during the demonstration that this is not the model, you know, we would just go and validate. This needs to go through a lot of different modeling practices. You have to keep testing the model to make it perfect. This is a smaller data set we were playing with, but the experience should be the same. As far as you have the data set well covered, you know the model you're building is right, and then usage of operation analytics like columns or indexes and other things can help you in getting better performance from the applications. Even though you have billions of users, should not be a problem. The scalability is a good question. And most of our services, what we run in Azure, is highly scalable and elastic. But also SQL Server running your R code with operational analytics can give you a lot of insights into the app. Any other questions? No? Cool. Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it.